So moving on to our reading this morning, it comes from the book of Hebrews. It's Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 to 11, page 1210 in the Church Bible. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 to 11. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not resisted to the point of shedding your blood, and you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us and who respected, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and love? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while, as they thought best. But God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Father, as Stuart comes to speak to us now, we ask that you will give us attentive ears so that your word will be opened up to us. Amen.
The passage in Hebrews that we just had read to us starts with a reference to the great cloud of witnesses. Now, that's a very powerful thought, that we are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. And through the years, many have been encouraged by that thought to realize that even in times when as Christians we may feel lonely, we may feel that we're the only one in a particular environment, or that indeed the ministry we're doing is a hard slog, just to be reminded and comforted and encouraged by the thought that actually before us have gone a great cloud of witnesses. So what does that actually refer to? For that, you really need to look back to chapter 11, you know, the chapter which every verse begins, by faith somebody did something or other. You know, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau with regard to their future, that kind of statement. You know, we've got Abel, who by faith offered a better sacrifice and was commended as righteousness. Enoch, who by faith pleased God and didn't pass through death. Noah, by faith pleased God, obeyed God's command, and did something which must have seemed absolutely ridiculous to all his neighbours, of building a boat in the middle of the countryside, although this year if you'd done it in England you might not have seemed so strange. Abraham, who it just says obeyed God and left where he lived and went somewhere completely different. Isaac, by faith blessed Jacob and Esau. Joseph, who by faith gave instructions that his bones should be carried to the promised land. Moses' parents, who by faith hid him from the edict of Pharaoh. Moses himself refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh, but chose to be mistreated as part of God's faithful people. So, and you could go on through many more of them, that there's this sense that all of us are following in the footsteps of those who have gone before, who have been faithful to God. And, you know, there's actually a parallel there with the Olympics, because the Olympics have been going since 1896, or indeed since 776 BC, if you want to look at it that way. So that is what makes the Olympics the kind of unique sports event, that people have a great sense of being an Olympian, that you are following in the footsteps of Coe, Redgrave, Jesse Owens, etc. I attended a meeting in Beijing where the head of the British team referred to the Olympic team as the most exclusive club in Britain to which money cannot buy entry. You have to be able to perform at a particular level to be in it. And so in a sense, Olympians can look back to the cloud of witnesses before them in the same way as we as Christians. The list in this chapter, the great cloud of witnesses, are those who have lived before us, whether famous or not, who have lived lives of faith, following God, worshipping God, and leaving us a spiritual legacy. And sometimes we just need that encouragement. Thinking about their lives, how they lived, what they lived for, and how they died can be an inspiration to us. Their example shows us that we need to have that kind of faith too. Then the passage goes on to say something like, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. The sporting metaphor is easy to understand. Can you imagine turning up to run the 100 meters in your overcoat, with your rucksack on your back, and getting down your marks? No. You take off your tracksuit, you're down to your vest and shorts, you've got your special running shoes, you're on your marks, you've laid aside everything that can hinder. And you're not thinking about what you have to buy at Sainsbury's the next day. You're focusing on that next 10 seconds, what you're going to do. But the writer of Hebrews says, you know, the idea of somebody running in his overcoat is ridiculous, but are some of you trying to live your Christian life with your overcoat on? Lay aside anything that hinders your Christian walk. Lay aside anything, the sin that so easily besets you and makes it more difficult to follow God. You know, as we stand here in the middle of July 2012, I just find myself thinking, can it really be 4 years since Beijing and Usain Bolt and all those amazing memories? And of course, it was 3 years previously that Jacques Rogge, the president of the International Olympic Committee, pronounced those life-changing words: the Games of the 30th Olympiad in 2012 are awarded to the city of London. London. And those words were life-changing for many people. You know, now the Games are upon us. The facilities are ready. Well, nearly ready. I was actually quite surprised in the Olympic Park to see how much building work is still being done and the final touches being put to things. But I'm sure they'll all be ready by Friday. The East End of London has been transformed. The tickets have been sold, if not to the right people. And for most of us, the Olympics will never again be held in our country in our lifetime. And, you know, many of us are proud that our country is the focus of the world. Some people will undoubtedly be irritated that the Olympics will dominate the TV schedules. Some will have tickets and have an unforgettable experience. Others may be disappointed that they don't have the tickets that they expected. Others will just be concerned about how much as taxpayers they're going to have to pay. And of course, I was delighted to see that a number of people from Fairfield are acting as official volunteers, games makers. And that will be a tremendous experience. But perhaps the question that some of you are wondering is, what on earth have the Olympics got to do with Fairfield on a Sunday morning? Is there a Christian view of the Olympics? Does God care who wins? In Philippians 2, there's a verse that says that the children of God, without fault, in a warped and crooked generation, the children of God are to be without fault in a warped and crooked generation. So how do you shine like that in the midst of competitive sport? How on earth do you live without fault? You know, Jesus told us to love our neighbor as ourselves. But how do you love the opponent who's pulling your shirt? How do you love the referee who doesn't see it happening? How do you love the person who's taken your place? For me, it's been an incredible privilege to know a number of Olympians and actually to walk with them a little bit over the last few months. And it hasn't been easy. I'm just going to mention two people who I know wouldn't mind me mentioning them by name. There's a kayaker, or paddler, and I'm learning the language, a paddler, called Angela Hanna. And I've got to know her, supported her a bit. She's a person with a very strong Christian faith. On her profile on the kayak website, she makes clear that she believes in Jesus. And the GB team was to be selected one Wednesday evening at 8:30. And I was in touch with her. And we had a laugh earlier because she had invited one of her teammates round for dinner so that they could be nervous together. And as I spoke to the telephone, she was saying, well, I'm here with my friend, or I'm not sure, perhaps my enemy. And she was in the K2, which is two people in a kayak. You see, I'm probably not getting too technical with all my knowledge of kayaking. A K2 is two people in a kayak. Perhaps you'd know what a K4 is. Anyone know what a K4 is? Anyway, Angela has been in a K2 all year with a partner called Lanny. And they were there nervously hoping that they would be chosen as the K2. And there's another couple who could have got the K2 instead of them. And two of them were going to go to the Olympics. Two were not going. Would it be Angela and Lanny? Would it be the other two? When I spoke to Angela, she didn't really know quite how to react, because she had been chosen for the K4 and Lanny had been left out. So it was a real bittersweet moment for her. You know, my dream has been fulfilled. I have slogged my guts out for 3 years to be in the Olympics, and I have made it. And my best friend, my training partner, without whom I would not have achieved this, is not going. And, you know, that's just... Incidentally, if you don't follow sport particularly, I sometimes say to people, think of a job interview situation. You know, think of a situation in which you've been deputy in an office, a school, or whatever, for years, and the person above is retiring, and you've had the whisper that you're going to get the job, and then the interviews take place, and they bring in somebody. You know, that's the kind of situation. And another person I've had the privilege of supporting, Marilyn Okoro, 800 metres runner. Trying not to make it too complicated, but if you follow that, you know that there are A standards and B standards. If you've got somebody who has done the A standard, which is more difficult, Britain can take three to the Olympics. But if they choose the B standard, they can only have one. And Marilyn has been the number one in the 800 metres this year. She was in the last Olympics. She's been in all the major championships. She's done the A standard 3 times this year. But she had a nightmare at the trials. She went off too quickly, got caught, finished fourth. The person who won the trials race had never done the A standard. She's never broken 2 minutes. Maz has gone 1:58 and so on. The selectors decided to choose the person who won the trials and leave Marilyn out, even though she'd got her three A standards. And, you know, terribly difficult to deal with. You know, the crushing disappointment that you have actually literally worked every day for the last 6 years to achieve it. And, you know, I don't know how people cope with that kind of situation who do not have an underlying faith. But certainly for Marilyn, knowing that Jesus is the author and perfecter of all things is what has carried her through. She's been selected for the relay, but, you know, that's very much just as a consolation prize because she really wanted to run the 800 and hasn't got the chance. You know, living for Christ in the rough and tumble of sport can be a challenge. You know, I think it was Jimmy Connors who used to say, "Love my enemy? I'd rather squash him." And, you know, how do you be competitive? And at the same time, keep your faith going. Debbie Flood is a rower who's approaching her third Olympics. Let's hear what her approach to sport is.
My name is Debbie Flood. I've won 2 Olympic silver medals. I row for Great Britain. It's what I do, but it's not what comes first in my life. My goal when I started rowing was always the Olympics. Sydney at the time was 3 years away, and 3 years might sound like a long time, but actually in order to get up to the standard good enough to go to the Olympics takes years and years of practice. And after 3 months of me starting rowing, I was actually told that I would never be good enough to make an Olympic rower. But I persevered and I carried on. We trained 3 times a day, we trained 7 days a week, no weekends, no lie-ins, it's just full-time training. When it came to the final set of racing, I ended up coming second. So I just missed out on a place at the Sydney Olympics. And at the time, I was absolutely devastated. I was gutted. It was a real low point in my life. And I thought, God, why am I here? Why have you put me here? I felt like I'd wasted the last few years of my life. Actually, at the end of that year, instead of going to the Olympics, I ended up going to the Under-23 World Championship Regatta and also doing Henley Roll Regatta in my single. I won both of those events and became the first British woman to ever win either event. And actually, I looked back in my life at that point and thought, wow, actually, God, you've got my life in your hands. And I did start to read the Bible then more and realised that actually I should have been trusting in God all along. My favourite passage in Proverbs is, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight." He will make your path straight. The Bible is God's word, and it's really important for me to be able to read the Bible in order to grow as a Christian and grow my walk with God. You can open it up and find words of encouragement when you need them, good times and bad times. So I really like to start off my day by reading the Bible when I get up in the morning before I go out rowing, and that really puts me in a good attitude and a good frame of mind. But for me, I'm a Christian, and that comes first before anything else, so that if anything ever challenged that, it would come secondary, my faith would come first.
If you'd like to see more of that, there are actually 12 little sport clips on the Alpha website. If you go on the Alpha website and just type in Sports Alpha. Just before I move on, I want to tell you a little story about Debbie. Debbie and I had a night out in Beijing, and she had won her medal, and she had it with her, and we met this cute little Chinese boy and his mother, and Debbie wanted to photograph. And so she took her medal and put it round his neck and took the photograph. At that point, the mother and son were about to go away, you know, having no idea what had been put around his neck. So she almost lost her medal there and then. That was a good insight into the life of the elite athlete from Debbie there. And one thing that I will be doing during the Olympics, as some of you know that I do a weekly devotional email, and during the Olympics I'm going to do a daily one just to give a Bible verse and a very brief thought related to competition for the 30 or so people that I'm in touch with. And I'm also going to do a prayer diary, which will list people and the day by day Christians who are competing, and I'll send that to the Fairfield office if people want to get that and use it. God's Olympics, I haven't really time to develop the more than gold side of this, but you will be familiar with that. 3,000 churches doing different events around the Olympics, including something called the Athlete's Family Homestay program, where basically Christian families are opening their homes to invite the family of a competing Olympian who cannot afford the going rate for a London hotel, which is in excess of £200 during the Olympic period. So families are putting them up, and this is a great service. Most of them will have no faith at all, and it's just, again, a nice way of being able to witness. Competing in the Olympics is incredibly exciting. It is the culmination of years of training. I remember Debbie saying to me on Beijing that the thought that was in her mind at the start of the race was, it's taken you 9 years to get here, don't blow it. And, you know, it is a full-on situation. And, you know, Debbie is actually retiring after London. And she had actually been in rowing for 15 years, not full-time all the time, but she was, because she was, did it as a student. But for the last 3 years, or even the last 10 years, depending on how you look at it, she has been rowing every day, training 7 days a week, as she said, all for a six-minute race. All for a six-minute race. And, of course, if you're a 100-meter sprinter, you're doing it all for three 10-second races. And if you do it in 10 seconds, you'll be out of the medals. And it is a really quite extraordinary profession, professional sport, that you know that you spend that amount of time training and preparing, and your success or failure is determined by 10 seconds or 6 minutes or whatever. But one of the things that encourages me is that there are an increasing number of Olympians who would endorse those words attributed to Eric Liddell in Chariots of Fire: God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure. You know, Chariots of Fire has just been digitally reissued, so do see it if you can. I never forget meeting Vivian Chariot, who is the favourite for the 5 and 10,000 metres. I said to her husband that I'd like to speak to her. This was in Daegu at the World Championships. And he said, well, what do you want to speak to her about? I said, well, I'd like to speak to her about running and about Jesus. And with a big smile, he said to me, you know, there's nothing more important to Vivian than running and Jesus. And I had the conversation. I saw her again at Crystal Palace. Lovely. And just another thing which put me in my place, rather. At the London Marathon, I was doing an interview with Edna Kiplagat, who's come third and second in the London Marathon. And I said to her, Edna, do you pray when you're running? And she looked at me and said, not just when I'm running. Sorry. And again, it's just one of the privileges of the job, just to meet people like that and to be able to encourage them. And, I mean, my greatest memory of Beijing was seeing somebody very shortly after they'd won a gold medal, somebody I'd had the privilege of praying with beforehand. And it's just brilliant to share in those moments. But what happens when it all goes wrong? A friend of mine describes Olympic chaplaincy as 20 funerals and a wedding. Because, you know, for every success, there are so many more failures. And what happens when it all goes wrong? We're going to see on the screen in a moment a swimmer who went to Beijing with a real chance of getting a medal. She had got Commonwealth and World Championship silver medals, European gold medals, and she swam 5 seconds slower than she was capable of. Why did it happen? Where is God when that all went wrong. This is a clip, incidentally, from the Scripture Union Holiday Bible Club material, which I'm using with permission.
Well, when I went to swim at the Beijing Olympics, I was maybe a favourite to get a medal. I had won a medal at the World Championships the year before that. The Olympics is quite a different story because it's a really high up level of competition, so you have to be at your very, very best. And at my favourite event, I didn't do very well at all. And I remember touching the wall and then looking at my time on the big scoreboard and thinking, oh wow, what happened there? And I knew it wasn't going to be fast enough to get me to progress further in the competition. And you know, I just sort of took a deep breath and thought, well, you know, I knew that God was still with me and he still loved me, and that I tried my best, and I honestly had. I couldn't have done any more. I remember just crying and crying and crying, and people were trying to comfort me and give me hugs. But, you know, all the thoughts that were going through my head, but I really felt this. The Bible talks about the still small voice of God, and I really felt like he just spoke and he said, but I am proud of you. And that really meant a lot to me, because I felt like I'd let everybody down and I'd been such a disaster, and the last 12 years of my life had been a waste. But, you know, God was still saying, no, I still love you, you're still my child. And I'd done my best, and it wasn't worthless what I'd done in the last 12 years, but I'd learned so much about just applying myself and training and all the hard work I'd done, and especially with Jesus. You know, there's never a disaster that's so deep that you can't lift you up out of it. It's very important to me.
When Kirsty first told me that story, I sat there with tears rolling down my cheeks, I can tell you. Incidentally, when I asked Kirsty if she'd do that interview for the Scripture Union, she said, yeah, I'm happy to do the interview, but I don't want to swim. I said, well, why? She said, well, my technique will be terrible. So if any of you thought that Kirsty's technique was terrible there, I'll apologize on her behalf. I love sport. It's a big piece of my life. I'm sure there are others here. I know there are others here who feel the same. So my closing thought to you is, don't feel guilty about loving sport. Make it your mission field. Don't feel guilty about the time you put into sport. Pray that you can use your gifts to the glory of God. Pray that you can use your opportunities to share something of Jesus with those you play sport with. You know, research shows that most people become Christians through the influence of a friend. And if there's a better way to make friends than playing sport with them, I haven't found it. So, use the opportunity of the Olympics to give a Christian resource of some kind to someone. And you know, this magazine is full of articles on the Olympics. It's got some Christian content, but it's completely cringe-free, and it's just the kind of thing you could give to anyone. And there's loads of other things out there. I think that More Than Gold, under the More Than Gold umbrella, about 50 different resources have been made. At the same time, I would ask you to take time to pray for the Olympics. You know, just pray that everything goes well in the wake of the potential security disasters that we've all been reading about, and just that things work. Pray for the games makers, for their important role, for those you know who are being games makers, and their opportunities just to reflect Jesus in the way they do their jobs of serving everyone and making the games work. Pray for the chaplains. 19 international chaplains and a lot more UK-based chaplains who are there just to serve, care for, pray with athletes in a time of great opportunity and great stress. Pray too for Christian athletes as they compete and use the gifts that God has given them. And we just long to see athletes and others encountering Jesus for the first time through the games, and joining the great cloud of witnesses that Hebrews speaks of. Thank you.